Laura Kanoy here. Thanks for listening to The Exchange. You'll hear several viewpoints and many interesting questions in this hour from people all over the state. There's no other place in New Hampshire where such a broad array of Granite Staters chime in and foster such a robust exchange of ideas. And as important as you are to the depth of the conversation, you also play a pivotal role in NHPR's finances. We're radio for New Hampshire by New Hampshire. Please click the support button at the top of the page at nhpr.org. From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The term the New Hampshire Advantage has long been a familiar political and economic theme, and for several decades, the Granite State has had several advantages widely believed to give it a substantial edge over its northeast neighbors. Factors such as a lower tax burden, higher income levels, and a steady influx of well-educated people eager to make New Hampshire their home. These all helped create an economy that was often the envy of the region. But now a new study says our much-vaunted status is in question. A report from the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies says several of these demographic and economic tailwinds that long helped our state are turning into headwinds. For example, more people are now leaving the Granite State than arriving. Also, our population is growing older and is aging at a faster rate than the rest of the country. It also says we're losing our educational advantage as we add college graduates to our workforce at a slower pace than elsewhere. Still, the report isn't saying that for sure our best days are behind us. Rather, its authors suggest we reassess key assumptions that have for many years guided state and local policy. Today in The Exchange, are we seeing the end of the New Hampshire Advantage? Let's hear from you. What do you think? Do you see our state's economic edge waning in recent years, or do you still see the Granite State economy as more dynamic and healthy than in many other states? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests in studio. With us is Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm based in Laconia. Russ also did some work on the study for the center. And Russ, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, great to be here, Laura. Thanks.
Also with us, Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, which put out the report, as I said, titled From Tailwind to Headwind, New Hampshire's Shifting Economic Trends. And Steve, welcome. Good to see you. Thanks
good
for being
morning.
Here.
Thank you.
Well, and Steve, what prompted you to take a look at this idea of the New Hampshire Advantage at this point of time? Why now?
We had been working with some data that Ken Johnson at the University of New Hampshire had been looking at showing long-term shifts in the demographic trends in New Hampshire from extraordinary levels of growth and migration to a slowing of that process. And we began to ask ourselves, what are the consequences of that? And how might we think about it from an economics perspective and then ultimately from a public policy perspective? And we discovered, as you pointed out, that there are really two answers to this question of what's happening. One's a short-term question, one's a long-term question. The short-term one is, sure, we're still a fantastic place to have a business in New Hampshire. We are a place that still draws businesses in, but we're not recovering as quickly as if we have in past recessions. That's one. The longer-term question is, with the lack of migration and population demographics, which have brought well-educated people here into the state and served as a primary engine behind increases in economic productivity and growth, what's going to happen to that economic productivity and growth? And the longer-term question, I think, is in doubt. And the purpose of the paper was to context that conversation. We need to have that longer-term conversation because our perspective of ourselves has to change with the changing demographics.
Yes, you can't just put demographics in a silo. It's connected to policy. It's connected to economics. It's connected to quality of life. It's connected to everything.
That's correct.
Yeah. And Russ Tebow, what jumps out at you from this study the most?
I think that it really comes down to the long-term fundamental trend that the state is enduring. And, you know, this week we had an earthquake. Earthquakes are very prominent in our minds. Short-term disruption, we feel it. I'd say the analogy of an earthquake, economically speaking, is a recession. On the other hand, sometimes we have beach erosion, which is very slow but can be more punishing. And I think what was going on even before the recession here was an economic slowdown in the state's growth. In the 70s, we added – I don't want to talk too many numbers here because I know they're hard to comprehend over the radio. But – If you go back to the 70s, we added 118,000 jobs. If you go back to the 80s, we added 137,000 jobs. But if you go back to the last decade, even before the recession, we had lost 23,000 manufacturing jobs before the recession started already in the last decade.
So that slide had been going on for a while.
Yeah, I think there's erosion that's been going on in you can see it in the economic numbers, particularly in terms of job growth before the recession. And I think that to a degree, certainly as Steve pointed out and the study pointed out, and by the way, all I did was an early read on the study. The center has done a great job on this study, and it's their product, and they should be very proud of it. And I've learned a lot in reading it. In any event, I think that what the main question here is, we are in a recession. How much are we going to bounce on the way out? And so far, it looks like we're going to bounce, as Steve pointed out, very weakly. And what does that mean for the state going forward? I grew up in New Hampshire. I was born here in 46. I'm kind of a little embarrassed to say. But I grew up in a slow-growing, relatively unaffluent New Hampshire. My kids grew up in a fast-growing, very affluent New Hampshire.
70s and 80s.
They all live outside of New Hampshire. If they moved back now, my four sons moved back now, they, I think, moved back into a New Hampshire that was more like the one I grew up in rather than the one they grew up in.
Let me just ask you a quick side question, and then I do want to pick up on what both of you said about the recession and so forth. You mentioned those job growth numbers, Russ Tebow, and you said in the 90s, even before the recession hit, we had lost 20-some-odd
In the last decade.
Last decade. Oh, right. In the 2000s. Okay. Mm-hmm. We'd lost X number of manufacturing jobs. The assumption in what you said is that the loss of manufacturing jobs is necessarily a bad thing. Mm. Could you also say, look, this just represents a shift in our broader economy?
Yes, but the center did another study that pointed out the impact of manufacturing jobs in the state's economy. And it's much more – manufacturing jobs are much more important than other jobs. For example, recently we've been adding jobs in the leisure industries, tourism, restaurants. They pay lower wages, lower benefits, are more likely to be part-time. Manufacturing jobs bring money into the state and then circulates around into retailers, and they pay higher wages, a full-time, and better benefits. So not only are we – is it a job quantity issue going back in time and before the recession, but it's a job quality issue as well.
And I remember when that study came out, we did a whole program on that. Do you want to jump in, Steve?
Yeah, just very quickly, we did look at are there other parts of the country that are growing more quickly than New Hampshire? And the answer is yes, there are. For the first time, we're seeing broad swaths of the United States experiencing greater growth and greater increases in productivity. And so while it's absolutely true that the nature of our national economy has changed, some states are improving their economies more quickly than New Hampshire. And I think for us, the question is, what can we learn from those states? Are there things that we need to do as a state to encourage that type of growth?
Let me invite our listeners to join us again, gentlemen. And then a lot more questions for you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email at exchange at nhpr.org. Again, today in the exchange, we're reassessing the New Hampshire advantage based on a recent study by the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, which suggests the state may need to reassess some of the key assumptions that it's long held about what benefits our state. Give us a call. What do you think? Do you see our state's economic edge waning in recent years? Or do you still see our economy as dynamic and healthy compared to many other states? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Steve, here's a question for you. Is it too early after the Great Recession to be drawing any hard and fast conclusions about our economic future, given that we're still in some ways digging out of this thing?
I think that if these trends were only occurring after the recession, I would say it's too early to tell. But because these began really in the 90s and the early 2000s and then throughout 2007, we had already started to see these fairly major declines. That's point number one. Point
these
number,
meaning
demographic the
demographic
trends and changes in productivity. And probably more important, as we age as a state, we become less productive for a variety of different reasons. And some of those can be counteracted and some can't. We at the very least need to think about taking advantage of our new demographic, which is going to be very different than it's been in the past. It's entrepreneurs that are 50 years old, 55 years old, instead of entrepreneurs that are 35 years old. What are the differences in those groups? How do we need to think about them differently? So my answer is it is something we need to worry about. These trends precede the recession, and they're going to, I think, continue post the recession. Hopefully, for the state's sake, we will see a bounce back and a return to some level of growth, but certainly not the level of growth in the 80s and 90s.
So the point is, we would have seen this anyway?
We would have seen not the depths that the recession created, but this ongoing trend of slowing productivity, slowing economic growth because of the national economy changes, but also then those that are specific to New Hampshire.
A less bouncy bounce back then is what you're predicting.
You go
ahead, Russ. Yeah,
I was going to say, if you go back to the early 80s and you look at our bounce back out of recessions, each one has been a weaker bounce back, and this one very, very weak. So I agree with Steve. I looked at the demographics, and Steve mentioned the demographics, and by my tabulations, all of the state's population growth in the last decade was over age 55 on a net basis, if you kind of pluses and minuses. And if you look at that migration, we've had net out migration each of the last 4 years. That may be related to the recession. But what's disturbing if you look over the last decade is that we've had pronounced out migration among young people in their 20s, net out migration. Now, typically, people move back in their 30s. That's what I did. Left in the 20s.
You go out and see the world.
Yeah, get your feet wet and pick up some skills and then come back to this beautiful state. The question is, if we don't have the right kind of job base, are people going to come back? That's the challenge going forward.
In their 30s.
It's always been, I think it's historically been that people in their 20s leave New Hampshire for a period of time on a net basis. But then it's an offsetting migration back in when they hit their 30s. And with fewer manufacturing jobs – and remember, the manufacturing jobs in New Hampshire are high tech. We lost a higher proportion of our manufacturing jobs to China than any other state in the nation during the decade. We're losing high tech manufacturing jobs. The other part of that is we're losing high tech manufacturing workers then. If there aren't jobs, the workers aren't going to be here. And that's a real part of New Hampshire's – been a real part of New Hampshire's competitive advantage.
Steve?
I think absolutely true. I'm very fond of the conversation about demographics, people leaving at age 20 and coming back at 30, because that's my demographic as well. I think it might be time for us to construct a 30 to 40-year-old initiative.
Well, that's what I was going to wonder, because so much of the energy and talk in recent years has said, let's keep those 20-somethings.
Right.
You're saying, what about the 30-somethings?
Yeah, I think probably important for us to create roots for people in terms of wanting to come back. But I think we all want our children and our folks to go out and create some economic and relationships, capital, and come back. And then the other thing I don't want us to focus too much on, we focus almost exclusively on the development of high-tech capacity and advanced high-tech manufacturing, and that's absolutely true. But there are still other sectors of the economy that are growing, business services and the like, which are really fundamentally something that we need to think about. Do we not only have to have an economic development perspective on the high-tech industries, but also these other industries?
All right. Well, lots more to dig into, gentlemen, after a very short break. And if you're on the line, stay there. We'll be right back.
I chose to become a sustaining member mostly because of the convenience. I'm Sherry Lapierre. I live in Dublin, New Hampshire, and I am a sustaining member of NHPR. Instead of pledging once or twice a year, it was easier just to, you know, take this amount once a month, and I'm good. And it also makes me feel more comfortable to know that I am giving a little bit over the course of the year instead of just, you know, during pledge time. It makes me feel a bit more responsible. By being a sustaining member, I think the benefits to the station would be cash flow. And if you have pledges once or twice a year, that's fine, but you have bills to pay every month of the year. So sustaining members help keep cash flow coming in, keeping things a bit regular, flowing smoothly. It's much better to have income on a regular basis than, you know, twice a year.
Good morning and welcome to our Fall Fun Drive. I'm Sarah Ashworth here with Rick Ganley, and we are counting down to the end of this drive, but we must raise $177,000 by 2 o'clock tomorrow to both end this drive, and then when we hit that goal, we'll receive $11,000 from a group of loyal donors. They include Penny Patu, Milo Pike, Bill Chapman, and Alex Ray. but they have imposed this one condition. We need to raise that $177,000 by 2 o'clock tomorrow. We do that pledge by pledge from listeners just like you. Make a pledge this morning at nhpr.org.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of money. Of course, it is a lot of money. But when you think about the thousands of people listening to our voices right now, when everybody does their part, it makes for very light lifting. We can do it very, very quickly. You choose to support community organizations that share certain values, lifelong love of learning and curiosity, and civility and respect. And NHPR's mission is to create a more informed public, to maintain a forum for civil discussion, to foster a greater appreciation for local and national and world events and culture. And because you're a loyal listener, that mission is probably important to you, too. So you can support it right now with your gift, your sustaining membership at nhpr.org. Help us reach the end of this drive, 1-888-805-6477.
And you can think of this drive as kind of like a bake sale. Those still happen, maybe not as much as they used to, but they do. And we're not asking you to buy that whole table of goodies or be the sole supporter of NHPR, but we are asking you to do your part, maybe buy a brownie or a Rice Krispie treat. It's when the community comes together and each person does his or her part. The bake sale is supported by the community, and so is NHPR. And you know what? It's a little bit more nutritious, I'd bet on as well. We're asking you to do your part this morning. Help us end this drive. We are getting so close. We can get back to regular program. You'll hear Morning Edition all next week again and The Exchange all next week again. Make your pledge today by calling 1-888-805-6477 or go online, make a pledge at nhpr.org.
Yeah, NHPR it's the salad, but yeah, we give you a little brownie as well.
You gotta have that.
There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I'll take two if you're offering. Give us a call now, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. Help us reach the end of the drive. We do it with everyone when everyone does their part. You know, here's another little incentive for you. We've got some thank you gifts, including the Eton radio. It's a radio, but it's also a flashlight, and it's a USB plug so you can charge your phone. It's a fantastic little radio that doesn't require batteries. You can crank it up if you have a power failure. With winter coming, of course, a lot of us in the rural areas, we lose our power all the time. It's great to have this on the bedside table because, of course, you can listen to New Hampshire Public Radio, you can have the flashlight, and you can charge your cell phone. So we will get you the Eton radio, a perfect gift for the holidays, as a matter of fact. When you pledge $20 a month, become a sustaining member at that level, we will send you that radio. So go ahead, get online right now. You can see the radio and become a member, nhpr.org, or give us a call at 1-888-805-6477.
And we are counting down to the end of this drive. As I said earlier, we must raise $177,000 by 2 o'clock tomorrow. When we hit that goal, we'll receive an extra $11,000 from a group of loyal donors. Make your pledge this morning. Get us to the end of the drive. We are getting there, and we can do it with your help at nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dana-Farber New Hampshire Oncology, Hematology in Londonderry, offering consultations with disease specialists from Dana-Farber in Boston. DanaFarber.org/Londonderry. And the Year of the Arts, Dartmouth, celebrating the vibrancy of the arts through programs all year. Information at arts.dartmouth.edu. New Hampshire weather, cloudy, some occasional rain today. Highs near 55 in the north, 65 in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a recent New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies report that reassesses the New Hampshire advantage. If you'd like to see the report yourself, you can go to our Facebook page or our website. We invite your questions and comments now at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What do you think? Have we been seeing the end of the New Hampshire advantage in the last couple of years based on demographics that have led to economic shifts? Or do you still think the Granite State has an economic edge over other states? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Steve Norton and Russ Tebow, let's go right to our callers. And Ellen's waiting in Ware. Hi, Ellen, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Okay, I have two comments, if it's okay. Well, the first one is our property taxes went up 44% this past year.
44%, Ellen?
Yeah.
In one year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And then the other comment that I have is that for people who run for governor, they need to take the pledge that says that they're not going to even look at or bring to the table the discussion of broad-based taxes as an option. And so people are voting not based on whether somebody is, you know, skilled or capable of so on. It's whether or not they take the pledge. And my feeling is that that's really missing the boat. It's changing the way our state is functioning significantly.
Okay, Ellen, thanks for the call. And boy, gentlemen, she's getting to the heart of what some call the New Hampshire advantage. And Steve Norton, that's our lack of a broad-based sales or income tax. Some folks say that's the New Hampshire advantage.
I think
Ellen doesn't agree with them, by the way,
right,
it sounds like. But yeah.
Understood. I think when you think about people, say someone in Washington, D.C., who's trying to identify a place across the country where they want to live, they've got a lot of different things that they think about. They think about their overall wages, which is how much salary you have minus the taxes that you're going to pay, whether it's property tax or income tax, plus the benefit of living in a place where you can, to some extent, go to the mountains or the ocean or Boston or not. So those are the things they think about. We tend to isolate the conversation about taxes to one tax, property tax, the business tax, the all the area, the meals and rooms tax, et cetera. Well, the fact remains that we are one of the lowest tax states in the country. And so what we do is we shift a lot of the burden to the property tax. Now, I think we can have a conversation, and a good one, about the regressivity of our existing tax system. But we remain a low tax state, and that advantage at least remains.
Yeah. On the other hand, let's go back to the slower growth scenario, the new normal in New Hampshire. And I think what it means is that revenues at the state level are going to grow more slowly going forward because we have a business profits tax. We have fewer businesses moving into the state. We have business enterprise tax, which is basically a tax on employment and wages paid. Both of those are not going to grow as fast. When we have slower employment growth, we have slower housing activity. So at both the state and local level, tax revenues are not going to grow passively as quickly as they have in the past, and that's going to put pressure, I think, continuing pressure on the revenue base of the state and local governments.
Well, Ellen, thanks for sharing your story with us. And let's take another call. This is Richard in Hanover. Hi, Richard. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
I just had a couple of comments. The first one is sometimes we attribute the loss of manufacturing jobs to just the actual loss of those jobs in themselves. When in fact, sometimes the cause of those losses in jobs has to do with automation and robotics, which increases the productivity level of manufacturing sites that causes us to require fewer workers to produce the same amount of products.
Right.
I know I live near Albany, and we have a brand new computer chip factory under construction there. And it's a pretty big plant. It's $5.7 billion, one facility, which is the largest industrial facility under construction in the U.S. today. And I watched that as it was evolving. And one of the things that I learned is when the CEO of Advanced Micro Devices said, you know, we've looked all over the world for where we're going to put this plant. And everywhere we've gone, they've said, well, we'll give you the land for free. We'll build a factory and give it to you for free. We'll buy all your equipment, and we'll make it tax-free forever. And he said, if there's no workforce,
it doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah. So what's your broader point about Richard, New Hampshire, Richard?
My broader point is that you can keep your taxes way down and lose your competitive edge, because the reason they went to Albany is we have the highest taxes of any state in the country.
Yeah, New York does have very high taxes. We looked at this the other day, actually, when we were talking about question one on our ballot, whether New Hampshire should permanently ban an income tax. I don't intend for our whole hour, gentlemen, to be talked about whether low taxes is a New Hampshire advantage or not. But clearly, Steve, it's on people's minds.
It is. And I guess the question is, there are two different questions being asked. One is, does taxation affect individual decision-making, people like you and I, or does it affect businesses? And the answer is yes and no. When most studies, when they look at corporate taxes, suggest that that's not a huge driver of decision-making, that a bigger driver is the availability of high-skilled workforce. those things tend to be the drivers of where these new firms locate, and in particular the high-tech firms. They're looking for places where they have highly skilled engineers and highly skilled populations that can support the very cutting-edge work that generally these high-tech firms are doing.
And your study found that we are seeing fewer college graduates enter the workforce here in New Hampshire than we used to, Steve. Other states are catching up, or we're slowing down?
Well, people are moving to other places. Those educated people are moving to other places. I mean, when you think about the New Hampshire advantage, we rank in the top of the country with respect to human capital. That's the brain power and energy. We have extraordinary high levels of economic activity for us. A recent report came out, put us in the top 10 in the country for 500 fastest growing firms per million people.
Wow.
We have a very strong business base when you measure things like the share of our economy that's high tech. Where we suffer relative to the rest of the country and, frankly, the world is with respect to costs, healthcare, energy, and the like, and infrastructure, bridges, roads, capacity to move goods in and out. So, you know, if we're going to change this conversation, the purpose of us asking this question is we tend to focus on human capital, economic creativity in the business space. Do we need to be focusing on other things? And let's have a conversation about those.
You know, Tom, not that long ago, last decade, Tom Friedman wrote a book, The World is Flat. And I think now the world isn't flat and America isn't flat. It's tilted to some degree away from New Hampshire. So a lot of the reason, I think, for these changes that we're seeing, slower growth, is that the competitive the world is much more competitive. Other states are much more competitive. The technology concentration that once existed in Boston, wherein 8 of the top 10 new technologies in the world were being developed around Boston, has dissipated. It's Palo Alto, it's Texas, it's North Carolina, it's Beijing, it's Mumbai, it's the Philippines. So the world has caught up to us. It's not that we're doing anything wrong. It's just that they're doing a lot of things right now that they hadn't been doing before. So,
well, thanks for that call. And our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And, gentlemen, here's an email that came in from Maria in Northvale, New Jersey. She says, unfortunately, New Hampshire is a beautiful state, but not conducive to employment. My husband and I left our home state for work as we need to make a living. Now in our mid-50s, we are struggling to get back all the years of income and savings lost due to job loss and small business loss. We're tired of working hard and getting nowhere. It was heartbreaking to leave, but out of necessity, we did. Maria says, New Hampshire must realize it needs jobs. It's impossible to live in New Hampshire and try to work, save, et cetera, for the average family. A gloomier picture than the picture that you painted, Steve Norton, about things still aren't really that bad here.
Well, yeah, first of all, there are still 5% plus of our population that are unemployed in New Hampshire. And so there are plenty of stories. We tend to be in a better position than many other parts of the country, but we're not seeing that decline. So,
and others who are underemployed, as you hear from our listeners sometimes.
That's right. So I think the answer is yes. We as a state need to have jobs in order to attract people here. We need to have economic growth in order to grow revenue to meet the obligations as established by the legislature for funding the safety net and education and all the things that we've taken on as a responsibility for a state.
You know, when I started out in doing economic consulting here in New Hampshire, some of my clients were industrial developers that were developing industrial parks in Salem, Nashua, Hudson, here in Concord. Excuse me. Nobody's doing that now because the risks are too high.
What do you mean?
Nobody is building new industrial parks, private industrial parks in New Hampshire, business parks. They would be business parks today. Virtually nobody's doing that because the pace of new firms moving into the state, which once was 150 new firms a year, good-sized firms, has really dwindled to almost nothing now, very, very, very few. So we're not creating the pods for a lot of new businesses to come into the state. We used to be able to rely on the private sector to do that. My feeling is we have to have the state step up to the plate the way they did at Pease, which was a very successful public-private partnership, to create more places for these job-creating enterprises to plop down in New Hampshire.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. And this is Chip in Gilsum. Hi, Chip. Thanks for waiting. You're on The Exchange.
Greetings. I love your show.
Good.
I have sort of two observations and kind of a question on both. My perspective is that I was in forestry. I am in forestry. I've been a forester for 30 years. So the first observation is that here in this state, which was just recently reclassified by the Forest Service as the most heavily forested state in the country, over the last 30 years, I've watched a lot of the small to medium-sized sawmills go out of business. We can't compete in that low-tech manufacturing, which really is sustainable and could create jobs. It used to be that there was a sawmill in every town. Those jobs are going away. One of the things that the domestic market is really flat because there's no housing starts. But
so what's the answer, Chip? What do you think?
Well, that's my question. We're sending raw logs overseas in containers. We're not even keeping our low-tech manufacturing. My other perspective is on education. For 5 years, I was a special education teacher. I had 4 years in New Mexico, which were just wonderful. I lasted 1 year here in New Hampshire after moving back because the workload was just so high.
Wow.
I recently saw at your website that UNH has one of the, if not the highest in-state tuition, and our students are coming out with the highest debt load.
Two important points, Chip. Yeah, and let's follow up on both of them if we could, gentlemen. And Steve, I have also heard people say what he says about the forestry industry. It's very frustrating to think that we're shipping raw materials like logs out of the state. We're not processing them here.
I can feel the pain in his voice. I wonder, how do we set a goal for what it is that we want to do as a state is a bigger question. Do we want to keep forest products here? Then we're probably going to have to subsidize them in some fashion. And if that's what we want to do, then that's
initially,
then the legislative or municipal decision making, that's what's going to have to happen. And really, that's if I had the question that Chip raises, I think is really an important one by example, and that is, what is our economic goal? Do we want to maintain small growth, high increases in productivity? Then there are probably a set of tactics that we have to follow to meet that goal. Do we want to maintain this concept of New Hampshire as a place where you build or construct wood products or mine those resources in some fashion? Then we have to do another set. And so my first point when I'm talking to folks about this question is we don't really have a set of goals as a state. Our energy is dissipated across a variety of different activities, and I think we need a focusing process that allows us to say, what is our goal? Do we want to have forest products here? Do we want to have high tech here? Do we want to have financial services? Do we want to be a hub for the Northeast for financial services? What is it that we want to be as a state going forward? And I know that's a difficult question to ask, but it has to be asked, I think.
Go ahead, Russ, real quick.
Just getting back to Chip's point, I think it highlights something about the private sector that's important. I did some work in Groveton where the paper mill closed, 500,000 square feet of high-quality manufacturing space empty. These large paper processing machines have been shipped to Vietnam and Brazil to never come back. So those jobs are gone. The machines are gone. All of the forest industry that supplied that mill is hurting. Now, but there's another story, which is Gorham. And a $10 million new papermaking machine, highly efficient, just moved in. So I think investment in more productive manufacturing is a key, and it can work even in the North Country.
And maybe after a short break, we can talk about how all those forests help create tourism jobs. People like to come in from the cities to spend some time in our beautiful forests. Chip, lots of great points, and we'll follow up again after a short break, so keep it right here.
I'm Derek Teer. I live in Grantham, New Hampshire. I'm a member of NHPR, and have been for a number of years, because we, the listening public, need to support a valuable institution. Well, I think it's an essential part of American life. Come on, fella, it's money well spent.
We think it's money well spent as well. We hope you do as too. Good morning. I'm Rick Ganley alongside Sarah Ashworth during our fall Fund Drive, our fall membership drive. The great thing is, Sarah, we are counting down to the end of the stretch.
We are on the downside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just $177,000 left to go. And we raise that amount by 2 o'clock tomorrow. We can reach our goal and receive an additional $11,000 from a group of very loyal donors here at NHPR. So just $175,000 now, as a matter of fact. Just got a live update. Now, we raised $515,000 this time last year, and we're hoping to do that again this year. We know we can do that. This is an achievable task, but it does take every listener at every amount doing their part to make it happen. So join with your fellow listeners right now, your friends and your neighbors, and let's put this drive to bed. You can help us secure that additional $11,000 when you become a sustaining member right now at nhpr.org or 1-888-805-6477.
Join your friends and neighbors. In many ways, NHPR is like a democracy. Every vote counts because each vote adds to this big, greater effort. Alone, our voices can be quiet, but combined, our voices can rise to a volume heard by all. It's what membership drives are all about, everybody pitching in together. We heard a little bit ago from Deborah in North Conway. She says she used to work in a financial planning office and wasn't able to listen to NHPR during the day. She writes now, "I am thrilled beyond measure to be working in my own firm, doing work that I absolutely love. And the icing on the cake is that I now get to listen to NHPR. As I have just started my business, my budget is very limited, but I wanted to contribute something. I hope to be in a position next year to become a sustaining member. Keep up the great work." That is so nice to hear from Deborah in North Conway. If you feel like, Deborah, you feel like it's such a treat to be able to listen to NHPR during the day, now is your time to support the programming at whatever level is right for you. You can make that pledge today at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
Yeah, Sarah, we hear from so many listeners who say, my radio has never known any other station but New Hampshire Public Radio. That's all it stays on day in and day out. You know, you don't have to be wealthy to be a philanthropist. We're all philanthropists to one degree or another. You know, it's defined as an altruistic concern for human welfare and advancement. Your support of New Hampshire Public Radio at any amount is a philanthropic act. You're helping to enrich this service, this community service, by enabling us to provide that excellent journalism and socially relevant information to everyone who has that radio locked on to NHPR. So become a philanthropist right now. Make your tax-deductible contribution to New Hampshire Public Radio. It's so easy to do. It's so quick at nhpr.org, or you can call us at 1-888-805-6477.
We need to hear from everyone during the last couple of days of this drive, whether you can give at the $5 a month level, at the $20 a month level, or maybe even at the $100 a month level. If you can give at the $10 a month level, we'll send you the NHPR member card. And with this card, we'll also send a little packet that has a lot of information about all of the discounts. You'll have access to all the popular two-for-one benefits at restaurants, museums, and other attractions around the state and around the region. You can also earn rewards points when you shop at more than 1,100 national online merchants. There's a lot to see when you get this member card and this packet that comes with it. So it's just one extra way we have of saying thank you for becoming a member today and supporting NHPR. You can make your pledge of support at nhpr.org, and thank you.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Pax World Mutual Funds, a leader in sustainable investing, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making, paxworld.com for tomorrow. And University of New Hampshire School of Law hosting the Kennison Lecture on the Texas Model of School Discipline and Juvenile Justice on October 25th, law.unh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, reassessing the New Hampshire advantage. We're looking at a new study that looks at whether New Hampshire's much vaunted economic status compared to the rest of our New England and Northeast neighbors is still, in fact, in place. The study says the Granite State for a long time had several advantages widely believed to give us a substantial edge over our neighbors, but that some of those advantages are now eroding. Join us with your comments and thoughts at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Joining us now on the phone is Dave Duve. He's a vice president at the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association. Dave, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Happy to be here.
Well, before we talk about whether the New Hampshire advantage is eroding or is at least in jeopardy, how do you at the BIA define the New Hampshire advantage? Because some people define it differently.
Well, I think if you were to ask different people in the BIA, we would probably define it differently
right.
amongst ourselves. There are so many components to it. Certainly the lack of a sales tax and a lack of an income tax is how many people have traditionally defined it. But in terms of employers in the state, New Hampshire has long been noted for having a productive workforce, and that's certainly New Hampshire advantage. Our natural environment, mountains, oceanside, a clean environment is an advantage. Being a lower cost state in a high cost region is an advantage. So there are many ways of defining it.
Even though our costs of energy and healthcare are often cited as, you know, problems for business, you're saying lower than other New England states.
Certainly lower, yeah, lower than other New England states. But I was interesting as I was listening to the lead up in the program that our competition, especially with advanced manufacturing and high technology, which drives New Hampshire's economy, isn't necessarily our neighboring states. It's places like North Carolina and Texas or other countries like India and Singapore. So, you know, these are things that we constantly have to remind public policy or policy makers, legislators, that you can't just focus on the New England states as being our competition.
You know, that's a really good point, because so often we say, well, compared to other New England states, or well, compared to the Northeast, you're saying it doesn't matter as much as it used to.
It certainly doesn't matter from a manufacturing perspective, where companies can choose to easily choose to expand in other states or other countries.
What about some of the demographic trends that we've been hearing a lot about in recent years and that this report highlights? You know, the fact that the state is aging and is aging at a more rapid rate than many other states, that we're losing young people, not just in their 20s, but also in their 30s, those who you would expect to come back once they, quote unquote, settle down. Perhaps aren't coming back in bigger numbers. We're graduating fewer college grads into the workforce. What are some of the demographic and workforce concerns that you're hearing on the business side, Dave?
I think two areas of concern, and they're probably related to each other, is one it relates to younger workers, our emerging workforce. One is that the numbers just aren't there, and part of that is because they may be choosing, having graduated from a community college or a four-year college system in a state, they're choosing to move elsewhere, or they're choosing to go to college out of state and then remaining in the state that they were educated. And then the second issue that we hear a lot about is the emerging workforce, those that are coming out of high schools and choosing not to go to college but go immediately into the workforce. Their skill level doesn't, there seems to be a gap with both their skills and also their attitude towards work environment that isn't meeting what employers are looking for right now.
Here's a basic summary of the report, and there's so much in there, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, Dave. But basically, the report titled From Tailwind to Headwind, New Hampshire's Shifting Economic Trends, it looks at these factors, again, net out-migration, aging population, decreased labor productivity, all, again, threatening the long-time New Hampshire advantage. Too gloomy, Dave Duve, in your perspective, or worth looking at, worth worrying about?
Well, yeah, I don't think of it as being gloomy at all. I think of it as being a valuable report in terms of helping us focus on what we need to do to grow our economy in the future. I mean, in New Hampshire's economy, you know, comparing it with the other New England states, I guess, or even nationwide, our economy coming out of the recession is stronger than many other states. Many other states would envy New Hampshire's economy right now. But that's not to say that we shouldn't be focusing on where we want to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now. And I guess from a positive point of view, I think we have components within the state that will help us achieve greater economic growth, things like community college system as an example that we maybe haven't fully utilized to the extent that we should, but the components are in place. We just need to come up with better methods and better ways of using them.
Right, and community colleges and the transition between those colleges and the workplace is something we've looked a lot at on this program. Dave, I really want to thank you for taking the time for us this morning.
Thank you so much.
That's Dave Juvet. Again, he's a vice president at the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association. We're taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Russ Thibault, to you real quickly, your thoughts on what Dave Juvet said. He says, you know, things are pretty good, but it is important that we're looking at these trends.
Yeah, I think one of the things he said, we really have to look within the state. And I think we have, that's one of my thoughts, that there was a time when, as I said earlier, we had as many as 150 new firms migrating into the state, large firms like Digital, Compaq, Apollo Computer. We don't have that now. So I think we have to move to a more grow-your-own set of economic policies. And I think that training entrepreneurs, Steve talked about focusing on the 30-somethings, but where do you go where you can efficiently learn how to start and run a business efficiently? You have chambers of commerce that help out. You have SCORE that helps out.
SCORE is the retired senior executive.
Exactly. But I think a focus on growing our own would be something I'd like to see us kind of look at. We always tend to think in terms of bringing new firms into
the
state.
Right. We talk about attracting businesses to the state.
But maybe growing our own. We do have a lot of educated people here. We have a lot of people that are in transition that may have lost their job. And right then, is the next Apple computer hiding somewhere in a garage in New Hampshire? And what can we do to get them going?
Wow. Steve?
So there's a great new book that just came out by a guy named Brad Feld on startup communities. And it's instructive for thinking about how you create an environment in which you have a garage produce Apple or any other of the technological innovations that have happened over the past 20 years. But one thing I do want to say is I don't think it's going to be just the state who's going to solve this problem. I think, you know, businesses are dealing with this workforce issue right now. Hypotherm in Hanover is building its own education facility within its facilities to produce a workforce that can support their activities.
So not asking the community
college.
Not
asking the community college system, but they are partnering with the community college institution, community college system to do it. Municipalities are generally now considered to be the hotbed of economic development activity. We don't think of that, but that is, I think, something that we need to think about.
Really,
more globally.
Give us a little more of that, because when you say municipalities, we think, you know, that's kind of stodgy, you know, road and sewer.
Right. Well, think about, people don't think about states any longer. They think about Austin. They think about Silicon Valley.
Sure.
They think about
Research Triangle in North Carolina.
Ecological environments that people are interested in. And so that is a partnership between the businesses, the municipalities, the state, regional planning commissions, community banks. And so I think that that type of focused engagement is what's going to be successful. What the tactics are beyond my knowledge or capacity. And I think – but that's the real question.
And other things to look at, not just traditional manufacturers, but the arts, for example. Portsmouth has a very vibrant downtown economy because of the arts. Concord is focusing on it.
Concord has been making a big effort along
those
lines.
Manchester has the Institute of Arts in downtown Manchester now. So arts and culture.
Keene does a lot on that score,
yeah,
too.
Particularly as we boomers retire, we get some money to spend to go out once in a while, maybe catch a play, maybe buy a piece of art. So I think the arts are getting to be more important as employment. And here in Concord, you have Menino Place, which is focusing on trying to get artists to live in downtown Concord. So the other things, forestry we heard about today. So one of the things that is a New Hampshire advantage that we haven't mentioned yet is the diversity of the state's economy. We have a good tourism, very strong, vibrant tourism industry. We still have a manufacturing base with about 60,000 jobs in it, not as big as it used to be. We've got tremendous retail growth. The Merrimack Premium Outlet Center, which is 400,000 square feet. So on our fringe communities, the border communities, they have very strong retail. So the diversity of the state's economy is something that we can build on going forward. We're not a one-trick pony.
You know, that's so interesting what you say, Russ, because it relates perfectly to what Steve said. The future perhaps is not in state policy and what the governor or the legislature is going to do. The future is in these sort of more micro areas. Even though you are with the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy implying state policy, maybe you're saying the future is local.
Yeah, I think it's local, but I also think it's regional.
Right.
If you look, there's a new study that came out by Kaufman looking at the fastest growing companies in the country. And the Manchester-Nashua region is fifth for small metropolitan areas in the country. We tend to think of Nashua and Manchester, but what if we thought of them as a place where you can build across these areas? Mm-hmm. What if we thought about the Concord region as part of the Merrimack Corridor? What if we did an economic development policy? I mean, that's what I'm wondering
All
about.
Right. Wow. Well, lots and lots to think about. Gentlemen, thank you very much, both of you, for coming in this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thanks. Good to be here, Laura.
Thanks very much, Laura.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. Time to check in real quickly now with our fall membership drive.